It's time now for Your Legal Rights with Jeff Hayden.
Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm the host of Your Legal Rights, Jeff Hayden. My guest tonight should be known by anyone who regularly listens to this broadcast, but tonight in a new role. More on him later. We've devoted a lot of time to elections, to democracy, and why we are farther than ever from a national consensus. Not that we've always agreed on who we are as a nation, much less where we should go. But our divisions, as of tonight, seem to go a bit deeper, a bit further. Interestingly, one thing on which each side can agree, is a deep distrust of recent elections, especially at the national level. Is it the way elections are conducted? Is it about who gets to vote? Is it about how elections are carried out? When one side wins, it seems the other side is unconvinced. And while power switches back and forth, something our founding fathers might have thought healthy for a thriving democracy, seems the party losing power is increasingly willing to challenge the outcome. Both parties are accusing the other of weaponizing issues, threatening democracy, and who knows what else. And just in the past couple of days, a social media campaign has called for a day of national protest tomorrow, that's July 17th. In this age of tribalism, there is little uniting folks these days. But please join in this conversation, whatever your views. You are our most important guest. Our phone number right here is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And we would like you, our most important guest, to join in the conversation. And as always, you can do so. You can call regarding any question on tonight's topic, which is just about anything. You're not limited to the exact point we may be in our conversation. But now to reveal tonight's guest. You've heard me introduce tonight's guest, Brent Turner, as the real activist. And Brent, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Welcome back to Your Legal Rights.
Hello, Jeff. Can you hear me?
We do hear you. And Brent, you're here tonight, not in your role as the real activist, but it seems you're donning a new hat these days.
So I am, Jeff. I'm glad to announce on the show here for our regular listeners and anybody just tuning in that I've been recruited by the County of Shasta in California to be their assistant registrar. So I'm working with a fellow, Clint Curtis, who is notable in the history of election system security. And we're here in Shasta County trying to create a good environment for public confidence and to basically heal some of the wounds that exist here in this county.
Now, I'd like to put a rumor to rest right now. Brent, you've been pretty active in politics behind the scenes, but you've been pretty active and your activities have been pretty much to one side, which is why Shasta seems to be somewhat of a surprise. Is this somebody crawling in the belly of the beast, or is this really an effort to form a consensus and get people talking?
Both.
Would you like to explain a little bit?
I think it's both. I think you've got my number, Jeff. And I think anybody that goes on Facebook or is familiar with my past recognizes me as an activist within the Democratic Party. And so this work is nonpartisan now, and I have to be respectful of that commitment, that it is a nonpartisan role. And of course, I want to respect all voters, whether they're Republican, Green Party, or Democratic Party. They all deserve representation and a fair election. So that's really the essence of the effort in Shasta County, is to take a situation that, by all accounts, is probably the most volatile in California, if not the country, right now for elections. It's very intense, and try to bring some calm information into the conversation and see if we can defuse it and then recreate it to be an example of best practices for California and the country.
And in case anybody doesn't know, what are the politics like in Shasta County?
This county is as red as the sun right now that is looming outside. It is a statistically Republican county, and the particular Republicans that are here are very feisty. So they're, a lot of them, you know, are big Second Amendment people. They don't have much tolerance for what they call snowflakes or Democrats or anybody else that isn't exactly aligned with their particular point of view. So,
and just in, you know, just in case people don't know you, historically, you've been anything but that. I mean, if I put a bag around your neck and tied it shut, you wouldn't turn any more blue than you've been.
I'm so blue, I'm black, as maybe a Black Panther-leaning Democrat. But yes, again, it doesn't really play in to this situation. I have been very forthright about my previous political leanings, and that didn't dissuade them from recruiting me. Clint Curtis, the current registrar, is a registered Republican. The board is controlled by Republicans, and yet through the power of information and education, they decided to bring me on board for the purpose of leading the county, along with Clint Curtis, toward a better security model for elections.
And to instill some confidence in the elections.
Yes. Clint is a stickler for surrounding procedures and paper ballot management systems. I think your listening audience knows my efforts have been directly focused on software technology for elections, specifically the advocacy of open source software in election systems. For your listeners that aren't familiar with that term open source or recognize the software, it is a software that allows for oversight during an event. And the build out of the systems for voting would be greatly enhanced if it was an open source environment with many eyes on the process. Currently, with proprietary code and intellectual property protections internal to the systems, you can't get a good look at the system, and certainly not a good enough look to oversee it.
So this is all about transparency, because it seems that neither side are willing to accept the outcome unless they like the outcome. Neither side
Right.
will trust the legitimacy of the outcome unless, of course, they like the outcome.
That's correct. And, you know, interestingly, Trump was a guy with the chutzpah to say if he didn't like the result, he was calling BS on the election, whereas he was kind of funny, not funny, ha-ha, because it's funny, like, you know, the world is crumbling, but funny to the extent that he confessed that he would dispute an election that you know, didn't go his way. And if it did go his way, he felt pretty good about that. That is problematic. And I think the Democrats learned that lesson with
Vice
Biden.
President Gore.
With Vice President Gore, they didn't learn their lesson there. That was Donna Brazile throwing in the towel early. But with the election of President Biden, the Democratic Party was smitten with the technology of the systems. And I warned them that that was a fatal mistake because they boxed themselves in by celebrating the systems that had bit them before with Hillary in 2016. Of course, that was an election that raised eyebrows, and the Democrats didn't enjoy those results. They didn't fight ferociously on that election. And then in 2020, of course, they celebrated the machines and the results. That boxed them in, obviously, on 2024. So when Kamala was looking to challenge the results, there was no political will for that.
You know, it seems to me that at the time of our country's founding, our founding fathers actually envisioned the peaceful transfer of power. And the first one in this country was in 1801, of course. And historians have looked down upon John Adams for not sticking around for the inauguration and leaving town the day before. And look where we are now.
Yes. Well, unfortunately, we started the effort toward election system reform and technology upgrades around 2004, I got involved, and that's when the original Deckert-designed open-source voting system appeared. We had an opportunity, specifically going through San Francisco, to create a system in San Francisco that California could have utilized, and that would have likely increased the usage of that system nationally. Unfortunately, San Francisco efforts fell apart, and that was a political story in itself, with us obtaining $1.3 million initially, and then London Breed taking it back. That didn't help us. Aaron Peskin has led efforts to keep open source out of circulation in San Francisco. Now, he's no longer in office, but the Department of Elections Director, John Arnst, has not been a friend of open source election system advancement. Then, as I think you know, but maybe the audience doesn't, we obtained $300 million for Los Angeles County, and that's $300 million.
You could really parlay that into some real money, I would think.
Yeah, when $300 million meant something back in like 2007, 2008. So we obtained this money for Los Angeles to create an open source system. And we put the caveat with the money for them to make sure that they stuck very closely to the real open source pioneers that had done this work. Instead, Los Angeles traipsed down the Mary Road with people that were not the original open source advocates. And needless to say, the $300 million evaporated. And the system that they then unveiled, which is really a wild part of the story, the system that they unveiled, they announced as an open source voting system, and hallelujah, the Holy Grail was present, and we were on the road to better days. Unfortunately, that was a lie. The system that they unveiled, that they paid the $300 million into, was not an open source system, as was then declared by the Open Source Initiative, the Department of Defense, and myself, three fine partners to say, that's not an open source system. Then Alex Padilla, Secretary of State, who you got to like these days because he got tackled by the popo there and thrown to the ground. So that makes you like him and want to stand by him. But Alex Padilla announced the system as an open source system and then had to retract and say, you know, you're right. It's not what we're purporting it to be. And then Dean Logan, the Los Angeles Registrar, that was in charge of the money, he admitted, you're right, you caught us. It's not an open source system. Now, the fact there was never any more to that story and the $300 million is gone and the country suffered the defeat of failing to move toward better voting systems, that is the real story here, is what happened to that $300 million and why is now Mississippi and New Hampshire, who have adopted open source voting systems and deployed them and are using them successfully, why are they ahead of New York and California when it comes to election technology? That is the big question. So that's kind of where we are now. If we can get Shasta in line with better procedures, and the Secretary of State would be so kind as to certify an open source system, we could really join Mississippi and New Hampshire in setting best practices precedent for the rest of the country. And California doing so would really be impactful.
And this goes beyond open source. In 2000, after the election, I'm sorry, 2020, after the election, the supporters of President Trump made some statements about some of the providers of election software, in particular Dominion. What was the end result of that?
I'm sorry, your question is, what was the result of the Dominion lawsuit?
Yes, and tell the listeners about what the Dominion lawsuit was and what the end result was.
Well, that was with, was it Fox News? Is that the lawsuit you're talking about where Dominion sued Fox News?
There's the Dominion suit against Fox News. There's also an executive from Dominion that had to leave the industry.
Right. Well, the lawsuit against Dominion against Fox News by Dominion was a real twister with very unlikable participants. You know, Dominion is not likable necessarily, although as I mentioned, the Democratic Party celebrated them in 2020. But that was unfortunate. Then the lawsuit by Dominion against Fox was interesting because Fox capitulated and settled it. And why they did that, I don't really know. But the fact is, Fox, I think, had a position that if it would have been carried out to the end, they might have been well thought not to settle that. Because the fact is, I think some of what they were saying, if not all, about Dominion was actually true. So truth being a defense to defamation, I wonder about their calculation there or how that happened. You have an unlikable defendant there with Fox, and an unlikable plaintiff, in my opinion, with Dominion, and they're bickering about something that is so technical that it defies layperson comprehension. But the fact is, the Dominion systems are vulnerable to inappropriately vulnerable from a security perspective, because of the proprietary code.
But there's a lot more going on than just the code and just the Dominion systems or whatever voting system there is. The way elections have been conducted in different parts of the country are very disagreeable. One place may require more ID, and putting those barriers on the margin will cost voters from certain groups making it to the polls. On the other extreme, if you don't require some verification of who the person is, you're going to get more fraud. And it seems that whichever side goes, there's a tipping point that somebody else is not going to like.
Oh, I think you're absolutely correct. And there's many factors involved here. And certainly, as we quote, tongue in cheek, open source is no panacea. Well, nobody's ever said it was a panacea. It doesn't cure all problems associated with elections, obviously. It is a necessary component of an appropriately secured system. And the front-end disenfranchisement issue that you're addressing with folks being disqualified or disallowed from voting because they don't have an ID, that is what I term front-end disenfranchisement, whereas what we're talking about is maybe even more insidious, because at least with front-end disenfranchisement, the voter recognizes they've been disallowed from voting, but with back-end disenfranchisement, the voter thinks that they voted, and they know they voted for Smith.
And they think their neighbors voted, too. And the expectation is that the way they're counted is going to give us some semblance of what really happened. Are you saying that that may not be reliable?
Well, we know from a security perspective it's not reliable under the current conditions of proprietary code voting systems, because you don't know what the code is telling the voting machine to do, how to count. So if it was counting every 15th ballot for Smith rather than as it was voted for with Jones, you wouldn't necessarily be able to catch it. Now, you could possibly catch something in the audit, but what we're talking about is securing the first count, which it comes from a software situation, and that's where our focus has been. Clint Curtis's focus, Registrar in Shasta, has been more toward the abolition of all technology when it comes to elections, and then the management of the paper ballot system. He has advocated for hand counts in his best practices philosophy, whereas I bypassed the hand counting issue, thinking to myself that that was unlikely to ever be a legal procedure. And right now it is still illegal in California to hand count per Governor Newsom's direction for Shasta County, where they wanted to hand count after throwing Dominion out of the county.
I don't understand. It's illegal to hand count the votes?
Correct.
Is that only for the initial count, or is that for verification as well?
Initial, for the initial count. So you have to use a computer, and the only computers that are available for use are proprietary code systems, and there's only three companies, Hart, InterCivic, ES&S, and Dominion, to choose from. So there's a market vendor lock-in occurring that results in exorbitant prices and an inordinate amount of control by the vendors. That's our current condition. If open source election systems were allowed to be certified, allowed to be used in California like they are in other states, then that cartel would be broken up, and what looks to be verging on antitrust would be alleviated.
So let's talk a little bit about some of the issues surrounding not just our elections, but the way our politicians are talking to one another. We've heard for years, the last 5 years, an increasing roar, each party accusing the other of weaponizing issues that they think may work to their individual benefit. We've heard each party talk about the other in terms of being undemocratic. Is there any move afoot suggesting that at some point the temperature is going to come down?
Well, we're in the hot spot here in Shasta, where folks wear camouflage and you know, there's been outbursts, physical altercations, and everybody is always upset and yelling at each other. That's what's going on locally in the world of elections in California. Now, nationally, of course, that tenor, I believe, comes from the top. So I'm going to try to stay nonpartisan, but I think you would be blind not to recognize that we're suffering here under the administration's behavior, and that behavior is childish and inappropriate and embarrassing, and I think it trickles down to other people that then feel empowered to behave that way, and so I do think the president has responsibility here. De-evolution is a horrible thing. The fact that they've now cut the education department in half is just another moment where we're spiraling downward as a country. And of course, all good patriots, I think, are coming forward to try to save the ship. And that's what I'm doing in Shasta. This wasn't a plan for me, but when I got the call, I had to accept the mission because I think it's important that California exemplify best practices. And, I'm just hoping to do this little part, and maybe others will be able to provide deeper solution for the other ailments. But yes, I'm in agreement with you. I'm just taken aback by the lack of educated conversation that's occurring in the country.
And in all fairness, it seems to me that if I was a Republican in California, even within a Republican stronghold, I might feel the oppression of the majority much as more liberal folks, most Democrats, in a Democratic stronghold of California might feel looking at the national picture and how we've not only been voted out, but are in many ways irrelevant. Isn't that very parallel to what perhaps folks in Shasta are thinking right now?
Well, in Shasta, there is fringe advocacy attached to both sides. I believe that my presence here and a big push toward educating the populace will result in better days, so that there will not be violence, there won't be threats against the staff manning the elections department. Like there has been, there won't be that fear of participating in the process. So that's, I think, step number one, is just alleviating that fear of physical retribution for helping the elections department or voting some way or people finding out what your political persuasion is. I think if we can just tone it down through conversation, that the trust will appear. The problem is when you conduct an election, if you don't conduct it properly, even a clean election will inspire allegations of fraud. On the other hand, you could have a dirty election that was presented well, and people will applaud rather than throw tomatoes. So the presentation of the election is crucial, because if you're doing all the right things and carrying out best practices, you still have to be mindful that the presentation is key, because the perception of the election is crucial. If the public isn't allowed to see what's happening, they feel like there is monkey business.
Unless, of course, they win. You're listening to Your Legal Rights. We'll be back right after this.
Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. We return now to Your Legal Rights with your host, Jeff Hayden.
You know, Brent, this goes beyond elections. This goes to day-to-day chatter. This goes to accusing each other of acting in a way that's hostile to democracy.
Yes, with some validity, because I think both sides will cheat if you let them. That's a problem.
And both sides will take mundane issues and see where the cutting edge is and where it favors them and jump ship and change sides and point a finger, characterize things in a way that benefits them, both parties.
Yes. Well, I think it's a human nature issue. And, of course, as the situation intensifies, less effective leaders, people that would provide good leadership will be less prone to run for office. So that there will be a problem there where now, because who would want the job? Who would want to get into that sort of a situation? So, you know, where their family is at risk and everybody's at risk all the time. So that's why we really have to calm down all conversations.
And in all fairness, in our bubble of the Bay Area, we're used to hearing about how the president, how the Republicans have weaponized certain issues of late. But it certainly didn't start there. Let's remember that the Democrats weaponized COVID when the president was not handling it particularly well. And they saw an opportunity to jump in, and nobody credited the fact that it was President Trump, then President Trump, who actually engaged the pharmaceutical companies to come up with the vaccine. We're having some trouble,
Jeff,
with the phone lines.
No, Jeff, I'm here. I missed your last question. Say again.
We actually have a caller coming in. We lost him. I think he's back. Dutch, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello?
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, that's weird. I got cut off, like I disconnected. Thanks for taking the call.
We're having some troubles with the phone lines. We lost Brent, but he's coming back in as well.
Okay, I just wanted a question and a comment on elections. I hope this is okay. So first, the comment is that most of the countries in Europe, they have a holiday and they only do paper ballots. They don't do electronic ballots and they don't have mail-in. Everybody has the day off and goes and votes and they hand count all of their voting. Because they, at least what they say, is that the electronic and the mail lends itself to the possibility of fraud to a greater extent than taking the day off and have everybody coming for elections, which I think is a better idea. So my question to you is, with all the special interests and all the political wrangling, do you think that kind of a thing could ever happen here with the day off and paper? They have over 98% of all ballots counted by hand the same day before the end of the day on election day, meaning before midnight, at least in France, which is, you know, like, I don't know, 80 million people. It's quite the achievement.
So we've lost Brent. I'm going to ask you, Dutch, if you would take the answer off the air so that we could bring Brent in. And I want to pose to him your very question because...
Thank you. I'll listen.
Thank you. And Brent, are you back with us?
I am.
We just got a very interesting question. I don't know if you heard, Dutch.
The comment
on the air was that certain segments have a big distrust for a lot of reasons of things such as mail-in ballots and having absentee ballots that are read sometimes hours, sometimes days after the polls close, and suggesting a viable alternative of a national election day holiday.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that, having an election day holiday so that people turn out? I know in certain European countries where businesses are closed on election day have tremendously high turnouts relative to ours.
Yes, there's mixed reviews on the national holiday issue. I'm not decided either way. I haven't really studied it enough, but it sounds good. If there are unintended consequences surrounding it, like some have suggested, I think they need further investigation. But at first glance, it sounds good to me. Other than, I think people would say that we should be able to go vote even if it's a work day, and that by putting it on a Saturday, that takes a day of leisure away from the workforce. I don't know. It sounds like I would probably think a national holiday for voting would be a good idea. I also, anything that increases access and participation is a good idea. I don't know what the counter arguments to that national holiday would be, but I think there are some that probably deserve attention. But I'm thinking it sounds like a good idea at first glance. Hello?
So with all of our discussions of late about what is and what isn't democratic and the weaponizing of issues, there was a social internet, well, actually an email that's coming around with a narrator purported to be Jane Fonda, calling for a day of protest tomorrow.
Okay.
What can you tell us about that?
It's the first time hearing about it because I'm in Shasta County fighting the fight for the election world here. But, sounds good to me. I've never met Jane, but I sure enjoy her movies and her politics. And I did march one time with Ted Turner, and that was fun. And he has done, some good work in the civil rights world. But if Jane is calling for, what is she calling for, a walkout or a labor strike or just protest?
Well, that's interesting. I sent you a link to show you. It's not more than a few seconds long, but some of the rhetoric is so extreme that it makes me wonder if it's truly her or an internet hoax. They're referring to Kristallnacht. They're referring to some pretty high-powered moments in history.
Yes.
And saying that we're at one of those moments.
Yes. Well, they're probably upset about masked people throwing random victims into vans and carting them away? Is that what's got their attention?
It may well be. And yeah. Some of those people are not lawfully here, but some of them are.
Yeah.
Some of them have criminal records, but some of them don't.
Some of them don't. Some of the ICE guys wearing masks in unmarked cars may be imposters. Which, the bad guys think of things like that when there's opportunity for them to participate. The bad guys show up. So, you know, obviously due process is the issue. And I think we want due process, if I'm not mistaken. So I'm sure there is a reason people are upset if that's the issue that we're talking about.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm Jeff Hayden, your host, and tonight we're talking about the structure of elections and how they can fix it, how we could really try to get a more civil dialogue going and really go to work on restoring our confidence in elections. Our guest tonight is a stranger to none of you. He's been on this show more than just about anybody, but tonight he's wearing a new hat as the assistant elections official out of Shasta County.
It's a fun twist, Jeff. And thanks for highlighting it. And, you know, I hope the audience finds it interesting that that you're one of your co-hosts that you allow graciously to be on your show is now the assistant registrar of voters in Shasta County. You know, it's an interesting plot twist.
And it's an unusual plot twist that brings you back there, of all places, of all people, to be there. But it's good work you're dealing with. It's good work you're doing. And if you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, and this would include Shasta County, if you are up there where Brent is and you want to talk to us about the job he's doing, you want to talk about your positions and why they differ from positions down here, we're open to talking about just about anything. Our phone number, toll-free, is 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. You don't have to jump in where we are in the line. We're free to talk about just about anything. And I see we have another call coming in. Brent, gird your loins. I think this will work.
Okay, let's try.
And is it Thomas I see on the line? You're on the air.
Yes. Thank you. The reason I'm calling is I think that there's a lot of fear amongst the public right now about electoral fraud. And, you know, we all know about the election deniers from the 2020 election, but there has been some pretty reputable research done into the 2024 election by groups like Smart Elections and Election Truth Alliance and statisticians that have been seeing anomalies. And because of that, you know, the main concern I think people are having is why do we not do regular audits of our elections when they're, you know, with the kind of technology that we have in place, there can be interference when you have proprietary, you know, systems where there can be so-called fixes that are done at the last minute that can change vote counting software.
If it's not done maliciously, we're trusting somebody else to be doing something that maybe they're doing a great job, maybe they're not, but we're not allowed to oversee it.
Exactly. And it's the kind of thing where it just is common sense that there be regular audits done that are, you know, transparency. But these kind of things are not allowed in these proprietary systems and it's just not common practice. So, like, for instance, let's say an election comes out where it's not close enough to come to an automatic recount, then people don't necessarily do a recount. And let's say there's some interference that's gone on, nobody ever finds out about it. until it's too late, you know.
For example,
and
there was a
scary.
To illustrate your point, there was a county I read about in upstate New York where every vote in the presidential election in a blue county, every one of the presidential votes went to President Trump. When the Democrats mm-hmm. won, all of the down ballot contests, and yet on the
exactly.
main one, not a single vote went that way. That would be a statistical anomaly, but the vote wasn't so close that anybody would have done a recount. Is that the kind of thing you're discussing?
Right. Yeah. That's Rockland County, New York, and there is a court case that's coming up regarding that. And the same organization that helped bring about that court case found many other anomalies in states like North Carolina that didn't reflect normal human voting patterns.
Right. And that prompts the maxim, if you're going to cheat, cheat big. Because if you
right.
push the margins outside the recount statistic, then there is no audit. To your point, we advocate as, and now I've got my election integrity hat on rather than my registrar hat, but my history has been to advocate 100% recounts and audits. And if you're going to audit 1%, go ahead and audit 100% and take the time and do it. There are audit protocols in the United States, but there is an issue as to when they are triggered and to what extent the audit will address the voted ballot. So your point is well taken. I will say getting a proper first count is perhaps as or more important than auditing properly. Problematically, if the first count isn't a secure count, theoretically, the second count could be artificially reconciled to match the first count if a bad actor in a darkened room had access to the ballots, and there is a time period and access issues and chain of custody issues regarding ballots that sit around waiting to be audited. So that's why we're very focused always on the first count to secure that count and then make sure you have proper auditing. Now you're on a good road to success and voter confidence. So I appreciate your comment.
Thank you.
And your comments remind me of a movie. I bring this up too often, but in 2006, there was a Barry Levinson film starring Robin Williams, Man of the Year, where the software went nuts. We elected a character clearly based on Bill Maher as president of the United States just because one of the other candidates, and not the leading candidate, had two sets of double letters in his name, which tricked the software. Here we can't check the software.
Yeah.
Well, Thomas, I appreciate you joining us. Thank you. And come back to your legal rights anytime. And let me take a call from Carolyn. You're on the air. Welcome to your legal rights.
Thank you so much. I'm listening to this program, and I have to say, I don't have a distrust of our electoral system. And I think everyone should watch Margaret Hoover's program on the vote, where she shows how they check the vote and how they check the software and what they do. And also, it's my understanding that either party can pay for a recount if they feel that it's unusual. My last comment is, while I don't support Trump, I think there's a lot of Democrats who did. So it doesn't surprise me that in a Democratic county, someone would vote for Trump, because there's other issues going on here that people have foolishly voted for this man. I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, Carolyn, first let me tell you, and I'm going to turn it over to Brent also, your comments are well taken, but we have to remember when talking about what they do to verify software or verify votes, don't these procedures vary not only state by state, but often county by county?
Yes, Jeff, that is true. There is not a good consistency nationally toward best practices, and it is individualized. There is something to be said for decentralization, certainly, but the fact is we're not seeing best practices adhered to with consistency, and that is something to strive for. Regarding the comment about access to the software or an ability to oversee the software, that is incorrect, unfortunately, because of the intellectual property protections. The software is not appropriately available for perusal or oversight. So that is a problem that exists. I'm not familiar with Ms. Hoover's work. I'm sure a lot of it is good, but on the point of the software, we are suffering currently this issue that causes will cause in the future distrust of the system. There's been much focus regarding the paper ballot management, but kids today growing up understand software and why you don't want a corporation controlling your vote counting.
I had a conversation on this broadcast just about 5 years ago with John Eastman. It was about 10 days before the 2020 election. And he made complaints about the problems with the election and all this fraud he mentioned in a couple of particular places. When I asked him how many votes were at issue out of an election of how many votes, he said that's not the point, but it was the point. I think what Carolyn is saying, and it's a point I agree with, is that overwhelmingly we need to turn down the temperature. That statistically, you're going to find some wrongdoing in virtually every election. But is it so significant as to question the result of the election?
Well, it's a revolving question. I think the solution is to secure the systems to our best available extent, and that will increase voter confidence. Once you open the system up to oversight, I think a lot of the questions fall away, and the concerns and the anxiety falls away with transparency and education, and that's, I think, what we need to strive for is solution, and also obviously we need to tone it down because, well, we just saw the people murdered in Wisconsin, I think, the couple, and there was more. You know, this is the outflow of our inability to temper the conversation.
And to lower the temperature, absolutely. These are people, this is born of frustration from someone who doesn't see it. They shouldn't feel that the system's at an end because they don't win an election. But people are desperate, and politicians are milking it by talking in superlatives that are extraordinarily dangerous.
Yes. And that is the moment we are in this country. And we're looking to leadership to do better. But we need to do better as a people, too, and get heavily involved right now on not only the issue of election security, but on the other issues you've mentioned so bravely tonight, because I think your radio show, to give you some kudos, is really cutting edge, and you've continued to address these problems. And in San Francisco and the Bay Area, which I know we're both very proud of, it's a good thing that your radio show is continuing on, so I applaud you.
And let's take one last call from Peter. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Quick comment. The way to turn down all the heat and all this is to make the result of an election inconsequential. You understand what I mean? Just inconsequential. Or there's too much at stake at every election, whatever, LGBTQ or whatever, should this be like this or like that? And everything shouldn't hinge on any election. It should be, I didn't think of an example, but just like very, very nuanced, incremental, gradual.
Let me ask you, Peter, when I was growing up, and I know it's been a long time, but it used to be that both sides would strive to approach from their perspective, but to try to make sense to the middle and go for those middle voters. And the marginal swings were much smaller. And of late, both parties are trying to argue from extreme positions so that whatever the outcome, someone's going to be really unhappy. Is that
too much is at stake? Don't make so much at stake. At any election, it should be like evolution, not revolution, is my catchphrase.
So the party should be looking for more moderate folks that could talk to the other side and not keep backing extremists on either side.
The whole system should be geared toward evolution, not revolution at any one point.
That's well spoken.
You like that?
I do. Peter, thank you for joining us. It's always a pleasure. I look forward to chatting with you next week.
Great. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And Brent, we have only about less than a minute left. Do you have any parting thoughts?
Hey, keep your eyes out on Shasta County and continue to pay attention to what happens there, because it may set good precedent. And please, if the listeners are interested in that issue of the software code that runs the election systems, feel free to contact the Secretary of State, Dr. Shirley Weber, and let her know that you understand open source is a better method for the software component of the system, and ask her why we're not moving forward with that if it is truly a best practice. And don't let her tell you that open source isn't a better practice, because all the top technologists around the world agree that it is.
Or at least, even if it's not open source, which is, I'm not arguing that that's the best practice, but even if they're not going to let us do open source, maybe let somebody in. Let a couple of neutral elections officials in on the secret. Let them watch. You've been listening
to
your...
We're doing it in Shasta, Jeff. We're doing it in Shasta.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've been discussing what's right and wrong with elections and the temperature. Our esteemed guest has been nationally recognized civil rights leader and election systems expert, Brent Turner, now the assistant voting official for Shasta County. Next week on Your Legal Rights, we take a look at the Electronic Frontier and your civil rights with a program jointly produced with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Please tune in. As always, we will take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guest, Brent Turner. On behalf of Your Legal Rights, a big thanks to all of you for listening. At the controls, Marlo Davies. I'm Jeff Hayden. Be safe. Have a good night. And zealously guard your legal rights.